Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to your penultimate Davis Cup Finals by Rakuten podcast. I'm Catherine. David's here. Matt, alas, is not. So all the well wishes that we sent him on last night's pod, rinse and repeat for Matt. Send him your absolute best. He's okay. He's just feeling rough and not up to being on the podcast. And even if he claimed he was up to it, I wouldn't allow it. I've given him very, very strict instructions to do nothing but nap. So get well soon, Matt. Don't worry. David and I are here. We've watched it all. We have thoughts. We have opinions. We'll be looking back and we'll be looking ahead to the fact that we have an Australia versus Canada Davis Cup finals final to look forward to. And that is because today we saw Canada beat Italy by 2-1. Now, I think, David, that we both predicted a Canada victory on last night's pod. And yet, I don't feel like I can claim any glory in that because none of it panned out how I thought it would at all. Maybe Auger Aliassime beating Musetti. That is a thing that I thought would happen. Everything else was a surprise today.
Same here. Felix has lived up to billing and then some, actually. He's really standing up and showing what he's made of in this competition. And it could be, it's quite interesting, you know, there was me talking about whether this might be Musetti's moment to show what he's made of. Well, I think Felix might have overheard that somehow or got the gist that people might have been suspecting something like that. Because this is, this feels a bit like him being Djokovic 12 years ago and taking the Davis Cup by the scruff of the neck and making it his. And we'll see tomorrow whether he actually does that. But that can often be a launch pad. And but you're right. To me, coming into this week, the whole story was Canada have the two best singles players overall. Okay, not individually. You could make an argument for Berrettini, who obviously hasn't had a chance to play singles. There are other players in the group that could be talked about, but to have two players of that level, you just felt as though they wouldn't have to play that much doubles. And yet here they are, they've already had to play two doubles and it be really tense and really stressful, and they've done it the hard way. So no, I totally agree with you. It's happened. But it has not happened how I thought it would happen.
Let's take it stage by stage, because Auger Aliassime beating Musetti was the second of the three rubbers, and that victory and the manner of it, the straightforwardness of it by Auger Aliassime was made all the more impressive by the fact that it was must win. He went into that with Canada one love down, and that was because Denis Shapovalov lost 6-4 in the third to Lorenzo Sonego. This was a fun time, David, this match, wasn't it? I'm so glad it didn't start at 9 a.m. UK time, as I briefly announced to the world on last night's podcast, because I'd have missed most of it. But yeah. As it was, I watched all of it and I flipping loved it. It was, I mean, it was quite a lot like Sonego against Tiafoe, wasn't it? It was showmanship. And it was kind of Shapovalov picking up where he left off from the doubles court a couple of days ago, wasn't it? It was casino tennis. It kind of felt like, how long can each of these men sustain their respective purple patches for? You know, we know that playing this style of tennis is unsustainable for a whole match. So who can make it hold for the longest and in the most stressful situations?
Yeah, Shapovalov won the first 9 points of the match. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, maybe we are going to get the scene that we kind of thought that we should be getting based on rankings, based on record generally. But Davis Cup often doesn't go like that anyway, historically. And I also think that Sonego is somebody that, in this kind of environment, you really underestimate at your peril. And if you're an opponent, you enter his type of match at your peril. Mm. I think Tiafoe and Shapovalov thought that this was their type of match and that they were relishing the fact that they could put on a show. But I think Sonego showed that in the right circumstances with a crowd behind him, and because it's close to Italy and Italy have brought a lot of fans over, he was feeling at home out there, and he was more up for that than or at least more able to handle that than they were. He was just the better player. Yeah. And I know it was 3 hours and 15 minutes today, but he could have won that in straight sets too. And he's a fantastic ball striker. I mean, the first few games, I think Colin Fleming said that the big Sonego forehand was being out-hit by Shapovalov by some 15 kilometres an hour. And then there was another injection coming from Sonego with that forehand, because it's almost like his eyes light up at the idea of, oh, you want to go toe-to-toe then? Let's do it. And he finished a lot of those rallies. And I think he buried a lot of his demons from this year, because another stat that Colin gave was that of all the top 50 players, he has the worst final set record this year, 4-1, 15 lost. And there he was, 5-2 up in the second set tiebreak and a set up, and he doesn't win that set. So to come back and win the third...
I didn't think he was coming back from that.
Blummin' impressive, that is.
Minor deviation here. I do feel like I should apologise for the background noise, which is just Billie Jean having a good old time with a squirrel toy. She's just high on life, folks. There's no stopping her. So apologies for that. I feel like we are all, you, me, the tennis world, and his opponents this week, are totally guilty of underestimating Lorenzo Sonego. And maybe with good reason, because I'm looking at him thinking, why am I hearing and seeing more of you on the tour week in, week out? You are too good to not be more relevant than you are. I shouldn't be looking at you and always thinking about that run to the Rome semifinals last year. You should have done something else of equal relevance since then. You're too good not to have. Well, I mean, obviously the road has ended here for Italy, but I still think this could be a catalyst for him. Time will tell. We'll see. But, you know, I underestimated him going into the match. I think probably my feeling before this tie was that Canada wouldn't need to go to the doubles. I underestimated him during the match. I did not think he was coming back, David, from losing that second set. I really didn't.
No, I didn't either. And yet, at the same time, when they were deep in the third set, whilst on paper, no, he shouldn't have come back because of all the reasons that we've discussed, he feels more reliable in that situation. There's something about
Shapovalov. Now then, David, is that statement about Lorenzo Sonego, or is that statement mostly about Denis Shapovalov? Who
I'd say more about Shapovalov. Really.
We're big fans of, aren't we? But you don't want him playing for your life, do you?
Well, look who he's lost to this week. Jean-Lennard Struff and Lorenzo Sonego. Shouldn't be happening. And look, I feel some people may feel like that's being harsh on him, and I'm sure his teammates and captain would defend him to the hilt. They were saying he left everything out there for 3.25 hours. I don't doubt that he did that. He tried his heart out, but he should have been winning. He should have won. He should have won the other day as well. And he doesn't win enough of those. And it's like, where it's, once again, it's where's the reliable pattern of point winning for you? And there's not enough of it. If he just had a little bit of what Ogier Aliassime has in that respect, Ogier Aliassime is now, it may not set the world on fire in terms of how exciting it is, but just in terms of running around a backhand to hit a forehand and to put it on the money in either corner and just wear you down. He is just becoming a master at that when he's on indoors. And Shapovalov needs to have some of that.
It's actually a really interesting contrast, isn't it? It's amazing to think that those two, I don't think they're not friends anymore, but they're certainly not as close as they were from what I gather. They used to be two peas in a pod, didn't they? When Denis Shapovalov first made his breakthrough, he was always saying, yeah, wait till you see my best mate who's a year younger than me come through. He's so much better than I am. But they're on the court, they're so different, aren't they? You know, if they could meet in the middle somewhere, if Felix could have just an ounce of the looseness and razzmatazz of Denis Shapovalov, I think that would do him good. And if Denis Shapovalov could have a little bit of the methodical, cerebral, methodical cerebral tennis that meat
composure.
And potatoes tennis, you know, a bit of the, I know that's so unsexy and so unglamorous, but, you know, the some of tennis does need to be paint by numbers. It's effective. It's those patterns of play, David, you're talking about. I know these are really unsexy turns of phrase, but I think they would go an awful long way for someone like Denis Shapovalov. As much as I like to see him win points with feet off the ground into out single-handed backhands, lovely. If only it were possible to win every point like that, but not even the greatest player in the world can win every point playing tennis like that. It's not possible. But I don't know if his mind will allow him to go down that avenue, David.
No, I mean, we'll find out in the years to come. There was a moment, I think, where you said Denis Shapovalov's still going to be playing casino tennis when he's 35, isn't he? And I thought, yeah, I mean, he may well do. And the thing is, he's already having a very lucrative and successful career in terms of a lot of eyeballs on him. He gets show court matches, he has some runs, he's got plenty of money, he's a hero back home in the eyes of some. I don't know about everybody, I don't know what the general view of him is. We do get quite a lot of emails sometimes saying that they wish we would go a bit easier, particularly on Felix Auger-Aliassime. A lot of our Canadian listeners talk about the pride they have in them both, and because they haven't had that many players like this before, and they're very young and all that sort of thing. It's just that, well, I think what it is that we hope that they are going to amount to more than they already are, and in Shapovalov's case, I don't see an urgency to do anything different to what he's already doing. And I think what he's doing currently is not going to get him much further in the game.
And look, if he's happy with that, then fine. He only has to look himself in the mirror. He doesn't owe us anything, but we are judging him by his talent and his ability, and that's what we want from him. He may have different expectations of himself, and that is okay. If, you know, if in 20 years' time he's retired and he looks back and goes, I had a really nice time on tour, had a good ranking, given myself a really nice life, whatever that might look like, absolutely fine. He owes us nothing. But we are not him. We're not in his head. We have, you know, we judge tennis and its players by slightly different parameters, don't we? So that's where we're at with him. And I love to see in, two out, feet off the ground, backhand winners. So I would really love to see more of those. So, we might see more of them in the Davis Cup, David, because we're going to be seeing Canada again. And when they were one rubber down, courtesy of Lorenzo Sonego's victory, 6-4 in the third, I still very much backed Felix Auger-Aliassime seemed to come out and beat Lorenzo Musetti for all the reasons we discussed on last night's pod. But it really did put the pressure on Felix Auger-Aliassime. It magnified his position as the breadwinner of that Canadian team, didn't it? We are relying
like
on you.
The night before.
We're assuming that you're a W in that column.
Yeah. And he was good to that because he didn't flicker for a second. I thought Musetti played well from the baseline. He could not handle the guy's serve. He couldn't get it back enough times. He couldn't get close to breaking it. And he had a couple of letdowns on his own serve, and Auger-Aliassime was just on him. And again, those patterns of play, particularly with the forehand, they're running around it, and you're not always sure which direction he's going to go because he just gets his feet in the right position and he can go either side reliably, hard. His footwork is the most incredible thing. His ability to just use that athleticism and balance to get in the right position, pretty much no matter where you put the ball. When he's on his game, you can slice and dice him and he will still get around it and sort you out if he's on form. And the serve has just become such a reliable weapon. So if that can transition successfully, I think Australia could be really interesting with him because he looks in a really good place. And a lot of people answered various tweets about him that we put out with the question mark around fangs. You know, is this the moment he shows he's got this killer instinct and he's clinical and he will just go out and beat people? Well, I think recent history would say that he's made major strides in that regard. He still needs to go out and do it at the Australian Open and at the French Open, at Wimbledon and the US Open, because he hasn't done enough of that. But that's for next year. He can only handle at the moment what he's got in front of him. And I think he's making strides here.
Yeah, I agree. I still don't think these are necessarily strides that give me an awful lot more data than we've already had from the last few weeks in terms of Grand Slam success. Because, you know, there are the big caveats there. Best of five sets, outdoors. You know, these strides that he's making now are over best of three sets indoors. And that will be a caveat until I see him in Grand Slams next year. But as you say, he can only do what he's got in front of him, and he's doing it. Musetti, David, you're less cynical about him than I am.
I've got some explaining to do, haven't I?
How do you feel about him after the match today? 3-4 it was for Auger-Aliassime. And I do think that was largely down to Felix, but I also have question marks about Musetti.
Well, I mean, indoors, he's the opposite. He doesn't look at home at all indoors, really, where he's rushed and he knows what he's supposed to do and he's trying to step forward and meet forward fire the way you're meant to, but he just at the moment doesn't have the stroke production, I don't think, that really goes with that. And so, I mean, my feeling is that I'm probably going to make some fairly forthright predictions about what he's going to do on clay next year. I just think he's so well suited to the surface, and we've seen that before because his breakthrough results came on. I just think he's going to make some major moves on that because he's got everything really for clay. And I think he could do well on some of the slower outdoor hard courts surfaces where it bounces high and all that sort of thing. But God, he looked rushed in this. He couldn't really impact Auger-Aliassime. He couldn't throw him off, or you need to be able to retaliate. And he wasn't able to retaliate often enough. And the main problem was he just couldn't get near the serve because You know, I'm not a great fan of some of the graphics that are put up in tennis matches showing all sorts of things about serves and all this. But when they show the groupings of the serve of Ogier Aliassime and where it goes, it was incredibly precise. And he just has, you know, they say, oh, he hits his spots. That's one of those sayings, isn't it, that commentators use or coaches use. My goodness, this guy hits his spots. He aims for a certain point. Mm. And even if he misses it, he misses it by a couple of inches.
Such an improved shot, that serve. Again, I'm really interested to see whether he can maintain that outdoors. I don't know, you know, how much the toss will be thrown off by outdoor conditions, all of that kind of thing. Very, very interesting one. But look, he dealt with what was in front of him today brilliantly. So Felix Auger-Aliassime levels things up. One rubber apiece. So I'm thinking Shapovalov, Pospisil against Bellelli, Fanini. Didn't really occur to me, David, that it wouldn't be that lineup. How were you feeling?
Well, at the end of the second singles, I did think Auger-Aliassime is coming in here because for a few reasons. One, he cleaned up Musetti in an hour and a quarter. It hadn't been very taxing, or an hour and a half. And Shapovalov had put 3.25 hours in and already had his back manipulated during his match against Sonego. So,
but those two things were both the case 2 days ago when Canada faced Germany.
They were, apart from the back thing, which did slightly make me concerned on his behalf, particularly as he went off after that manipulation, that's when the wheels started to come off. And then what happened was he did an interview and Colin Fleming nigh on had to chase him to get him to answer a question before he disappeared. And he says, I'm only going to ask you one question, because he was clear that Auger-Aliassime wanted to get out of there. And he said, are you going to play the doubles? And he said, Dennis has had a 3 hour match. I've had a short match. Captain will make the decision, but I'm ready to play, is what he said. And it just felt instantly like this is going to happen. So off he goes.
Do you think he would have known that going into his singles? There's a good chance that you're going to be playing doubles today, Felix.
That's a good question. I don't know. I think at the start of the day, they would have probably been expecting to play Shapovalov.
Yeah.
But then the fact
that Felix is giving that answer, presumably without at that stage having had the discussion with Frank Dantsevich, implies that that scenario had been played out or discussed earlier on in the day. I don't know.
So, certainly around that 3 hour match, I think that, they've said all along, we're really lucky we have two players who can play doubles with Pospisil. And I think he probably must have got told that, look, Dennis might not make this. You know, he's struggling a bit. And I think Felix he was bursting out of the seams to play. You could just tell.
I love that.
He was saying, look, I had the sort of singles match, he said in his post-match press conference, I had the sort of singles match that you really want. Everything went according to plan. It was quick. It was efficient. Straightforward. So I was ready to play doubles, you know, and I also get the feeling that he just wants this responsibility, a bit like Dimonor last night. There's a moment with these guys. I think we've seen it from Fritz as well. That's when you feel like they've elevated themselves. Shapovalov he did very well to win that point for them the other day, but I've never got the feeling that he's reached the level that those three have reached. Even Dimonor, who I don't know who's had the higher ranking out of Shapovalov and Dimonor, but there's the way they just seem up for putting the country on their back and just saying, "Come with me, I'll take care of this."
I feel like that's something that's always in our year-long predictions. Who will finish higher in the year-end rankings, Alex Dimonor or Denis Shapovalov? And I groan every time. we'll come back to that. So I think I raised one eyebrow at Felix Auger-Aliassime's name on the doubles team sheet. Definitely more than one eyebrow, David, at Matteo Berrettini on the Italian team sheet in place of Simone Bolelli. Now, we know with hindsight now that that was due to injury of Simone Bolelli, and that it was foreshadowed a little bit. They were prepared for this scenario. Berrettini had been hitting a little bit in practice, didn't felt a way off playing singles, but was sort of vaguely primed to come in the doubles. And I know it's something that you brought up as a possibility yesterday on the pod, but I really dismissed that in my mind. I thought that was pie in the sky, the possibility of playing. I really was surprised to see his name.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that when I initially heard it, I mean, first of all, I saw Colin tweet, it looks like it's going to be this. And I didn't even read the name of Berrettini because I was so focused on the confirmation in his lineup that Felix was playing. And I didn't even bother to read the second two names because I thought it was Bolelli and Fanini. And I thought once it was Berrettini, I thought that this was just a mind games move by Filippo Vanandri, that they were going to say, okay, I'll see your Felix Auger-Aliassime and I'll raise you Matteo Berrettini.
I thought the same, David. As
some massive statement.
Yeah, I did clenched teeth emoji. Mentally at it.
Mm. But, you know, as it turns out, I mean, I think it's really, really impressive from Berrettini that he stepped up and he felt okay to play and he had a right good go. But you could see the difference in sharpness between, even if he wasn't injured anymore, it's the difference in sharpness between himself and all the other three players on the court. He tried hard, but...
And I do think... Increasingly, having watched quite a lot of doubles this week and Davis Cup on the TV and watched a lot up close in real life last week in Turin, I've had a lot of doubles exposure in the last couple of weeks. Sharpness is everything in doubles. I mean, of course, you know, you've got it's the quick reactions, isn't it? I remember, can't remember who it was on Prime Video, but one of the pundits telling me about the drills that the Bryan brothers used to do, which sounded death-defying to me. You basically just stand right on the net while someone is trying to body shot you constantly. You know, it's all about those sharp, fast twitch reactions, isn't it? I think sharpness is everything, and that's what I noticed didn't seem to be there with Thanasi Kokkinakis last week, for example, and certainly wasn't there with Nick Kyrgios in the opening match, and it sort of came as the week went on and as the adrenaline built up, but it wasn't just there on demand. And I don't think it was there with Jack Sock the other day because he hasn't been playing match doubles, hasn't played it since the Laver Cup a few weeks ago. And how could it possibly have been there for Matteo Berrettini today? I mean, of course, logically, it wouldn't
be. He did well, really, to even... I mean, they made it close. It was 7-6, 7-5. But they always felt like they were hanging on. I felt that you were waiting for Fanini maybe to conjure something. And he did a couple of times and they got themselves a break up, but they couldn't hold on to it. There was a moment where they let one go over their shoulders, just not quite communicating right, and it looped in. And so credit to him. I think the fact that he came on this journey and was in the crowd and was so... There's a wonderful screenshot I got of Sonego's victory and Berrettini's in the melee afterwards. David. And it was magical, really.
Matteo Berrettini is only 26 years old and I feel like I've seen more images of him experiencing intense misery than any of us should ever have seen. I mean, I know Italians wear emotion well, don't they? They experience it very viscerally and very palpably. And those images of Berrettini and Fanini and the press conference, oh, it's a lot, isn't it? And they're reminding me of that press conference Berrettini did last year in Turin when he had to pull out of his home tournament, pulling the baseball cap down over his eyes, just... It's a lot of Italian emotion isn't it? And I love to see that level of caring, and that if it's not too sadistic to say, that level of heartbreak, I'm sort of pleased that they are experiencing that intense an emotion about it. But it was tough to see. I mean, Matteo Berrettini deserves a break in 2023.
Yeah, he does. He does. And I think the good news is he's still got plenty left to offer. You know, he's not old. He's tough and strong and motivated. And I don't think he's necessarily going to get that much better. But I think he's already really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can get luckier. Yeah. You're right. He does need something to fall his way. But I mean, just those emotions, we can do a proper sort of review of the week and of Davis Cup generally and what we think about it and the format and everything. We can do that tomorrow. But I do feel, looking at those and feeling those emotions that all these guys were going through, and we've had it on a daily basis, something's right about this thing. And I've loved the week as a result of that. Every day I've felt uplifted and like I've experienced something cool.
Yeah, I absolutely feel the same. And the quotes from Fanini afterwards, you know, saying, "I'm 36. I don't know if this opportunity will come again." That was pretty tough to hear, wasn't it? And Davis Cup, it is about winning it, isn't it? Nobody's putting Davis Cup semi-finalist on their CV. It's kind of win or nothing.
Any losing team, no matter if it's even reaching the final or losing, you get those desolate scenes. And they don't have that moment where they're doing the runner-up speech and everybody's being nice to them. They don't get that in the same way. They're just gutted.
Yeah. Oh, Italians being gutted is it's a really intense mood. But it was balanced out, David, by Canadians being thoroughly delighted.
Yeah, it was.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
There's a couple of talking points with Canada, aren't there? They're looking ahead to the final and how big an advantage it is for Australia that they've had the extra day's rest going into tomorrow's final. I think it could actually be quite big. What do you think?
I think it feels to me like it equals it out a bit more, because on paper, again, Canada should be winning this thing because they have such a superior singles player in the number two position on paper. Shapovalov should be beating Kokkinakis. He should be beating Thompson. Who are they going to pick? Who are Australia going to go with? Because Kokkinakis was unconvincing the other day against Cioric. And Thompson has been a revelation. It's just that he is, on paper, limited by comparison. I think that they they should be going for Thompson personally. I think that they should just put him in there and get him to challenge Shapovalov. Get him to come up with the goods time after time after time.
Yeah, keep him honest.
And with the fatigue and with the fact that they were very honest that Shapovalov was feeling it out there. You know, he's a fit lad, but he also has been on his holiday already.
Do you think there's any risk that Shapovalov won't be fit to play?
Might be, but what's your other option? I mean, you're then looking at Vasek Pospisil, I think, as your next player who can play singles, but is not on that level of those two. They, I don't think they've been banking on needing to do that. And so I think unless Shapovalov's properly injured, he'll be playing. And they'll, again, you're asking him to come up with the goods for long enough. And we know he's capable. I mean, and he should be going in as favourite against either one of them. But I think I'd be going Thompson. I do. And just getting him to make players and make as many balls as he possibly can. Who did he beat on the first day? I can't remember who it was. Was it the guy from the Netherlands? I think it was, wasn't it?
The guy from the Netherlands. It was Talon Griekspoor, David.
That was him, yeah. Who kind of plays
a guy from the Netherlands.
Yep. Yes, he's got the he had yes. the bigger game.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
And Thompson just absorbed it all and just hung around.
I think Jordan Thompson could be a real pest to a tired and potentially slightly physically compromised Denis Shapovalov. I mean, obviously, on a good day, on a hot streak, Denis Shapovalov has way more in his arsenal than Jordan Thompson, but it's not as simple as that.
So, look, fatigue definitely could play a part here in the favour of Canada, in the favour of Australia.
And then you get the two Mr. Davis Cups up against one another. What's going to give? Auger Aliassime against de Menor?
Well, again, it should be Auger Aliassime in terms of games. He is the more accomplished player. He's got the bigger game. And if he's serving well, it's going to be very hard for de Menor to get many looks, as they say, at breaking the serve. But I just don't think... I don't think you can count out de Menor as just on paper this should happen. He makes me feel that there's more to him in Davis Cup than there is on the tour. He's a more dangerous player in this competition.
And I'm not even going to ask you to preview a potential doubles match because who on earth knows who'll be playing in it? They'll probably get Daniel Nestor out of retirement or something. I don't know. There'll be some sort of wild card that'll throw us off.
All I can say is I hope it goes down to the
Me
doubles.
Too.
We've had four in a row. Yeah. And it is such a great way to conclude a tie, it
sets Davis Cup apart, doesn't it, and Billie Jean King Cup as well, the way it elevates the doubles. And okay, it can also minimize the doubles in that you might end up just not playing it altogether, but when it is played, everything's on it. It is maximized and highlighted and elevated, and that's great. One other talking point with Canada, David, and maybe this seems a little indelicate, given, you know, we should be celebrating the fact that they've reached the final, and we do, and we have. But there is the very big question of whether they should even have been playing in these Davis Cup finals at all. And there is a pretty strong argument that they should not have been. They were a wild card entry, essentially replacing Russia, after Russia was banned from the competition, which is something I absolutely think is the right thing. But Canada had been eliminated fair and square at the qualifying stage and then were essentially reinstated into the tournament because a vacancy became available and they were selected subjectively by the board, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I think they might have used the rankings in the end to decide it, but you're subjectively deciding, I think, how you're going to decide it. And look, I think it's brought into sharper focus because that tie, that qualifying tie, first round tie in March of this year, played in the Netherlands, they lost 8-0. And they didn't have Denis Shapovalov on the team. They didn't have Felix Auger-Aliassime on the team. Their team was Alexis Galanou, Steven Diaz, Peter Polanski, and Braden Schnurr. That was their team, and they did not win one set in eight. And then the final rubber, the fifth rubber, they didn't play because it was no longer needed. And I think, look, there's some people out there like Marty Fish as the US captain, who was very vocal at the time and said, why are they in this? Why have they got the chance to win this thing now? And now they are in the final. I mean, nobody's mentioned it this week, but it does warrant mentioning as a bit of an asterisk, I think.
I think there will be. The size of that asterisk will be a matter of perception and judgment, but that asterisk is there for sure. It feels deeply unsatisfactory, just as it did with GB, Billie Jean King Cup. The situation there was that they were eliminated at their qualifier in April, I think it was, and at that stage the venue for the finals hadn't been selected. The venue was then subsequently chosen as Glasgow, and GB were reinstated, given a wild card as the hosts. Now, obviously, that tournament was very much elevated for having the host team present. We've lost enough home and away. It definitely shouldn't be having a situation where a country is hosting that isn't represented in the finals. However, it did not feel right that a country that had been eliminated fair and square by competition were playing, thereby rendering that qualification tie completely irrelevant. You know, it feels very unsatisfactory and just leaves a slightly sour taste. I don't know, you know, these finals were elevated for having Canada there, those finals were elevated for having GB there, but it's a slippery slope, isn't it? You know, the integrity of the competition should come first.
I understand in this situation the situation with Russia is so extreme that I don't know how you can necessarily plan for those things. And they also have the financial element and who can stage these events, who can actually do it. Not everybody can. And that's one of the things that they're running into. I'm hopeful that the success of them will come to the fore in the end and make it a lot more easy to be equitable in terms of how you stage the events and all that sort of thing. But I don't think wildcards should exist in this tournament. I really don't think there should be Davis Cup wildcards. I just don't think there should be.
Yeah, I agree.
I've got another idea for the Davis Cup, which I'll tell you about tomorrow.
Okay.
Which I want to float by you on the show. But, you know, I'm still encouraged because I've enjoyed it way more than I expected to all week
long. Same. It's been a good week. It has. And I can't really call it tomorrow. Paper says Canada, but got a little feeling for Australia. Don't know.
I'll go Canada just because of the strength of their singles players, but I definitely have a feeling in the pit of my stomach that Australia could cause the upset here. They're going to love being the underdogs, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Leighton Hewitt said it, didn't he? Right, that's for tomorrow. One more day of the Davis Cup finals. I'm looking forward to it, David. Tell me it doesn't start at 9 a.m.
It doesn't start at 9 a.m. No, I think same time. I think it's another 1 o'clock
p.m. local
time
12
start.
12 p.m. UK.
12 o'clock.
So probably UK, quite early in the US, but, you know.
Canadians will all be up, I reckon.
Yeah.
definitely seen a lot of enjoyment of this result in Canada.
Yeah,
we've made the case for why it's awkward, but I'm also chuffed for people who are into tennis in Canada that are really enthused by this. It's great.
our mascot today, David, not in Canada, in Massachusetts, in the state, East Longmeadow, Massachusetts, which sounds like the sort of place that, you know, a children's book character might be from, you know, like a Mr. Men.
Yes.
Lovely. Now, it's actually two mascots, and they are brought to us by Mark and Holly Rush. And one is Indy, a 12-year-old Shih Tzu poodle mix. They got Indy from a local shelter as a puppy. He was named by our kids after Indy Jones, who I assume is Indiana Jones.
Correct.
Don't know if Mark and Holly know Indiana Jones well on a sort of familiar basis. But anyway, Indy Jones. His main interests are archaeology, snacks and walks, but mostly snacks. And Indy's co-mascot is Cooper, a 2-year-old Cavapoo. I got one of them.
Hey.
They say due to COVID restrictions, he was delivered to us in something called the Puppy Express. Just like,
this is all
isn't
very familiar,
it? Billie
isn't
Jean
it?
Was delivered to me and my brother in a black cab. Bonkers. Puppy Express, an air-conditioned delivery van in the middle of the night. He loves people, playing with his brother, cuddling, and taking up more than his fair share of our king-size bed. Cooper, that is very familiar. I'm looking at a picture of Cooper. He's got that Cavapoo look. Indy is also absolutely gorgeous. I love the idea of them being best friends. Oh, they've got matching bandanas, David. Oh, I like it. They're really cute. So thank you, Indy and Cooper, and thank you, Mark and Holly, for bringing Indy and Cooper from East Longmeadow, Massachusetts, into our lives. We have our mascots. Dave's got Darwin, I've got Carter, and Matt has the dearly departed Gerald. Billie Jean, who's on my shoulder, is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our executive producers and all-around top blokes, Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner. And David, we have shout-outs.
Yes, we do. It's still not the same doing these without Matt, but we're going to do our very best. And we're going to start with a name that is familiar on this podcast because it is another member of the Rush family. Our
Ian.
Mascot providers. Today we've got, no, not Ian Rush, the Liverpool striker of the 80s who went to Juventus for an ill-fated £3.2 million deal. No, this one is Ben Rush, who is the son of Mark and...
Oh, Holly.
Mark and Holly, sorry, Holly, indeed. And yes, Ben is a senior at Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts, studying cybersecurity. Oh. And Ben says he is the captain of our nationally ranked squash team. I've also played and taught tennis my whole life. I had the chance to attend the Laver Cup when it was in Boston and regularly spend a day at the US Open. He says, if Matt or David are looking for a challenge on the court, let me know.
Love that.
I am not taking on an expert in cybersecurity.
That will be music to my dad's ears because he is and always has been a very keen squash player. And he's very concerned and worried about the future of squash. Squash courts are sort of disappearing the world over. So it's good to hear it's thriving in Massachusetts. So
absolutely.
Thank you, Ben. Big day for the Rushes on the podcast.
Yeah.
We inadvertently gave Ian Rush a shout out. don't know if he's a listener.
Do we know any Ben... Any Bens in the tennis
yes,
world?
That new Ben Shelton. Yeah,
that's right. Who's tearing things up, getting all sorts of results.
He was the top college player, wasn't he, last year?
That's right. We've also got Matt Polin, who is from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.
Been there,
and Matt says, found your podcast 7 years ago while on a holiday road trip and we were looking for some entertainment for the drive. I've been a huge fan ever since.
Lovely stuff, Matt. Been to Fort Lauderdale. Lovely spot. You got a great name.
Yes. We say it differently, don't we, depending on where we're from. Fort Lauderdale or Fort Lauderdale, as they say it.
I think it's just an accent, David.
Yes, that's right. What I mean.
Okay. Well, they say everything differently.
You and I say, we say quite a lot of things differently, don't we? Brummies and Southerners.
Next shout out, anyway, David.
Thanks, Matt. Chris Wiley is our next shout out from Cambridge. And Chris says...
Like Jordan Wiley.
Yes, like Jordan Wiley. I think a different spelling, okay. But pronounced the same. And Chris Lewis, who we covered in Tennis Relived back about 2.5 years ago. The player, was he from New Zealand, who got to the Wimbledon final, and he played John McEnroe back in the day. Anyway, Chris says he is a super fan of Andy Murray.
Oh, good on you, Chris. Lovely stuff.
Good person to be a super fan of. Thank you, Chris. We also have Stephanie Usplund from Washington, D.C. in the United States. And Stephanie says, my friend Priyanka of Phoebe the Corgi fame. Told me about this pod in 2020, and I've been listening and loving it for the past few years. It inspired me to pick up playing again. Oh, I can't believe we've actually inspired people to pick up playing tennis again. That's lovely. And I've worn a Tennis Podcast t-shirt to matches where several people have asked me if I have a tennis podcast. I hope you get some new listeners after those matches.
Love that. I'm going to go Stephanie Graf, David.
Absolutely. Yep. Because she used to be called Steffi Graf and she now likes to go by the name of Stephanie.
So there we go.
So good comparison. Okay. And finally, we have Angela Link from St. Louis in Missouri in the United States.
Meet me in St. Louis.
And indeed.
St. Louis. It is St.
Angela
Louis,
Mortimer was a Wimbledon champion who beat Christine Janes, who used to be Christine Truman, in that Wimbledon final of the 60s. And Christine was telling us not so long ago about how she had a slip in that match and while she was a set and a break up. Oh, and she still thinks about it all the time, every 60 years on. Anyway, Angela Mortimer won the title, and Angela is our... not that one. This Angela is our shout-out today. And Angela says, Dwight Davis, the Davis Cup founder, and Ken Flack, a former player, were both from St. Louis, and Arthur Ashe attended high school here. Jimmy Connors grew up just across the Mississippi River in Illinois, says Angela. So there we are. We have a little potted history.
Love that. I do love the background info that our people supply to us. So thank you very much for taking the time to do that. Thanks to everybody that has become a friend of the Tennis Podcast at shout out level, intro level, mascot level, all of it. All of those slots will be coming up for grabs again in a few weeks' time. You can become a friend of the Tennis Podcast at any time you like. The link is in our show notes. But if you want to grab a mascot, intro, shout out, all the rest of it, there are other rewards up for grabs as well, or will be up for grabs from mid-December onwards. So link is in our show notes. But if you just want to gain access to all of our lovely extra bonus content, then go now. Why waste any time? Same applies to the newsletter. David doesn't like it when I promote the newsletter because I get a bit arsy about it. But just, there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't be subscribing to the newsletter. It is free, excellent content. Make Matt's day, folks. He's having a bad week. Make his day and subscribe to the newsletter, all right? Thanks.
Read his stat.
Tell your friends. And most importantly, join us tomorrow for one final Davis Cup podcast of 2022. Almost said 23 then. Oh dear. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.